This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
TSN1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior wearing a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center, it's an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Reminder, 9:30 this morning, we're going to open up the phone lines. Going to turn it over to you if you think that Dustin Byfuglien should be a forward for the Winnipeg Jets or if they should move him back to defense. 9:30 this morning, so get your comments ready and we'll open them up in about 1 hour's time. Richie, you had some clarification on the Ryan O'Reilly CBA aspect.
Yeah, just looking at the CBA, and we were talking about Ryan O'Reilly in the first hour in terms of, you know, what do the abs do with him. If they have the option of tendering him a qualifying offer or alternatively just take him immediately to salary arbitration, as far as I can read it, because he exceeds a certain salary cap threshold. If they make him a qualifying offer in arbitration, he can't make less than 100% of what he made the year prior, which is $6.5 million. And if they take him immediately to arbitration with no qualifying offer, then he can't make any less than 85% of his salary and bonuses from the year before. So any way you slice it, he's in a great position financially if that's the case.
Dustin Byfuglien, we're continuing to discuss him and his value. You know, and you know, it's sort of an interesting question in Dustin Byfuglien. How much trade value do you think he has? Well, that's sort of a two-part question. Do you think the Jets will try and explore the trade market for Dustin Byfuglien?
I mean, I wrote that article last year, Drew, about his trade value. It's kind of gone up and down and back and forth. I guess it really depends on where you're going to play him and where he's playing. And I mean, the longer you wait to trade him, the less valuable he is because the less time he has on his contract and the older he is and the fact he's out of shape at times certainly probably wears in his body a bit. Can a team trade for him and have him in their top two or four D? It depends probably on the construction of the roster. Not the top two, but it depends on the construction of the roster. Can't defend well enough to play top two, I don't think, right? So, and then are they going to play him a forward? If they're going to play him a forward, you know, what are they trading? Are they trading a defenseman for him? I mean, is it reverse now? Is it end up being a defenseman that you trade for Byfuglien that you're going to put a forward? Because if you're trading a forward, why are you trading a forward for a forward? Yeah. I don't know. I'll put you this way. There's a market for Dustin Byfuglien. I think there's a bunch of teams who would certainly be interested in him. Whether it be, you know, Dale Talon, his former GM in Florida, whether it be Mike Gillis in Vancouver needing size and secondary offense. I mean, how great would he look on the right side of Ryan Kesler, right? Mm-hmm. They don't really need defensemen there. They need scoring. So for sure there's a market for him. But what you could get for him, I'm sure everybody's lowballing the Jets right now for him. Now, right now, maybe less so than they were 2 weeks ago. But the Jets are likely looking for some kind of a young, up-and-coming defenseman who's probably ready to play already and a pick or a top-six forward who's under contract and at least controllable for a few years. That's what I anticipate them looking for.
Do you think the Jets are hurting or helping his trade value by playing him as a forward the last few games? Ezzy, I'll start with you on that one.
I don't believe for a second that they're quote-unquote showcasing him, and you might disagree with that, but I think that they're playing him at forward because that they think that he is more effective as a forward. And I don't think that they're really doing either, Drew, to answer your question. I don't think they're hurting him or helping him because I think that at this point in his career, he's 28 years old. I think everybody knows who Dustin Byfuglien is. There's no hiding, mm-hmm. You know, who Dustin Byfuglien is. Not that the Jets or Dustin Byfuglien's trying to hide who he is. What I mean is Dustin Byfuglien's been in the league now for several years. He's won the Stanley Cup with the Chicago Blackhawks. He's been with the Thrashers and Jets franchise now for 4 years. And everybody knows what his abilities are and his weaknesses are. And I think right now, I look at the amount of teams that would be after him, and I kind of scratch my head, and I wonder how many teams are really serious about acquiring him. And Richie mentioned that some GMs might be calling Chevy and lowballing him a little bit, and that might be the case because of the fact that he has so much offensive ability, but he has those defensive deficiencies, less so on forward. So I have to think, this is my own personal opinion, and you guys might disagree, and that's why I think we're going to open up the phone lines later, but I think he is more valuable as a forward if you're trying to acquire him. In that sense, I guess that teams are after him. And you look at, you know, some of his possible destinations. Richie mentioned Vancouver, maybe Florida, because as you remember, Dale Tallon was the GM of Chicago when Byfuglien was there. And I look at Byfuglien, and there has to be a fit, Richie. Does he fit in on a strong defensive team like a St. Louis, or does he fit in on a strong defensive team like Chicago? And you also have to realize that those are in-division teams. So I'd have to think that Chevy would ideally like to trade him out of the division, possibly out of the conference, so he doesn't have to face him a lot. Now, it depends how much you read into that. Some people don't read into that much. You can see the Frolik trade, or for that matter, the Setoguchi trade, as far as examples of GMs trading in their own division. But I think this is a bit of a different situation where Byfuglien's a better offensive talent. Two teams that have come up before, and two teams, I know we're just playing the hypothetical game here, two teams that come up as possible destinations for Dustin Byfuglien are Philadelphia and the New York Rangers. And the Philadelphia Flyers, as we know, are not afraid to make a move. And I think Dustin Byfuglien, you put him on one of those wings, even though the Flyers' strength is on forward, I think they might be willing to move a defenseman. Now, is that going to be a defenseman that the Jets are interested in? And, you know, you think about some of the players that they might be interested in. Dustin Byfuglien at this point is either going to play less minutes as a defenseman, or he's going to play second or third line right wing or wing, as Richie and I were discussing. It's really up in the air where his permanent spot is. He might go up and down from the second and third line. But really, the amount of teams, it's curious to me. I don't know the answer to this as far as how many teams are interested in him. I would have thought earlier on the season, dating back to last year, it might have been 10 or 15 teams. Now it might only be half a dozen teams. And to me, the teams that probably want him the most are the teams that are having trouble scoring goals. So a team like the Rangers, they've started to score goals a little bit more. Is he a guy that fits into their system? Vigneault's had varying degrees of success this year. They've started to play better. But again, Byfuglien, how does he change the dynamic of that team? What team does he really fit into? And I definitely don't think it's a defensive-minded team.
A couple of things. The first of which is, do you take a shot at him on defense? I mean, if things are going as they are now, and I like the way they are now, you leave him. But, I mean, does a team or the Jets, do they ever take a shot at him back on defense with Maurice as a coach? I wonder if Maurice can get through to him in a different level than Noel could in terms of playing defense. Something to consider. In terms of, you know, his attractiveness on the market, you also have to take into account his contract status, $5.2 million for the next 2 years. And I say that in respect of the Winnipeg Jets more so than other teams. Would he consider re-signing here? I know it's close to home in Minnesota, but it's a fishbowl, and we know that as well as anybody. And he doesn't like the media attention at all.
Yeah, but he's had a pretty... I don't think that the media has been hard on him.
I don't mean that, Drew, so much as I mean the attention that he gets, period. Media attention, fan attention. If he goes to play in Florida, nobody knows who he is, and he can just chill and play hockey. And they could be a good team, right? And I think that has an attractiveness to some players. And I'm not saying this out of facts. I don't know this. But I suspect that it may be some consideration for him, because, hey, it's a different... You make the same amount of money. You don't pay any state tax. And the pressure isn't there, and I can still perform, he would probably say. So, you know, he seems to take to the fans. Don't get me wrong. It's like, but he makes comments about the media being negative, and the media always, you know, overanalyzing and all these things. So you read into those a little bit. It is an interesting situation. Now, Kevin Cheveldayoff, having said all this, Kevin Cheveldayoff, I don't believe, has made a player-for-player trade yet as the Jets GM. I don't believe there's been a one-for-one trade in terms of talent, right?
He's just
traded for
picks.
Tingratti. He's traded... That was a draft pick. He's traded for Frolik draft picks. He's traded Odia for draft picks, traded for Setoguchi with draft picks. I don't believe he's ever actually made a player-for-player trade, and this would be a player-for-player trade. So how do we predict what a guy who's never been a National Hockey League general manager will do when he's made essentially one trade that wasn't with somebody who he used to work with? Because the Oduya-Frolik deals are with Stan Bowman, who you worked with in Chicago. Sure. So the one trade he's made essentially is a Setoguchi deal.
Well, and right? The Ponikarovsky for the seventh-round pick.
Sorry, Ponikarovsky for the seventh-round pick. So those, but the Setoguchi deal is a little more, you know, second-round pick has value as opposed to that seventh-rounder, which has little to no value. So that's hard to predict too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Richie, not only is it a player-for-player deal, it's a very unique player.
Mm-hmm.
Dustin Byfuglien really is a unique player, and I'm a big fan of his as far as, you know, his style of play, and I know it's frustrating, and I think that's why he is a fan favorite in Winnipeg, but I guess he's taken a lot of criticism. I mean, you remember last year it was his weight, and he brought his weight down, and this year it's really been his defensive lapses, but as far as the type of player he is, you find a player that's similar to Dustin Byfuglien, and it's really difficult. You could find a couple, but not a lot. So it's most likely, I would think, if he does get traded, and again, we have no idea if he will be traded, I would imagine is it's a combination of a high draft pick, and I would think that they'd want a forward back. Because I look at the depth charts, and sure, the Jets do have a hole in their top four there. I think they've had varying degrees they've had varying degrees of success with Keaton Ellerbe, Mark Stewart, other players in that left side top four spot. Those guys are ideally third pairing guys. So I think that they probably would entertain the idea of a veteran defenseman, but I'd have to believe that they'd want possibly a guy that they think might be able to play second, third line center. Because you have to think about it, there is a chance that Olli Jokinen won't be re-signed. We don't know that. He could be re-signed, but I'd have to think that there's almost a 50-50 chance that he won't be coming back because of the amount of money he's going to be asking. For me, $4.5 million for a third line center is a little bit much.
Even though he gets more than $2 million a year.
Yeah, we should give Jokinen credit. He does have 17 points in his last 20 games, so he has played better this year. I'm just saying, I don't know really how much he factors into the long term plan. So I'd be shocked to see Byfuglien, as Richie mentioned, be traded just for one player. It would probably be two players, a draft pick, high draft pick. I don't think it's going to be a third or fourth. I think it's second or first.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break. When we come back, a little bit more on the Dustin Byfuglien question. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still to come at 9 a.m., John Forslund, the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, will join us to talk a little bit more about new Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice. We're going to open up the phone lines to hear from you in regards to our Dustin Byfuglien question, so you can prepare for that in the last hour of today's show.
What's the question?
The question is, would you prefer Dustin Byfuglien as a forward or as a defenseman? Do you think he should be a forward for the Winnipeg Jets, or do you think he should be a defenseman? That is the question. We turn over the phone lines to you coming up in the last hour of the show.
Well, one more time. Got to give a big shout-out to Marshall and Jeff Stevenson. Richie's chowing down on a McMuffin right now. Those guys are great guys in from Calgary. They were on the round table yesterday. They just brought us three boxes of donuts and about 12 egg McMuffins, so big thanks to them again. Really good guys. And we appreciate them bringing that in.
Absolutely.
Very well said. Here's the numbers, how it bears out right now. If the Jets keep Dustin Byfuglien and they play him as a forward next year, this isn't including any of the restricted free agents, and this is assuming that they don't re-sign any of the unrestricted free agents, the Jets will have $28.85 million tied up in nine forwards. If they keep him as a defenseman, it's $19.7 million. That's for six defensemen. So that's how the salary cap numbers break out so far, depending on where you slot Dustin Byfuglien next season.
Since year one, they've spent too much money on defense, and this allows them to have a different focus in terms of money spent.
And I mean, you know, we've talked about this before, but you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff's off season this coming year is a lot, you know, easier than it was last year, where the only real key member of this team that he has to re-sign if he chooses to go that route is Michael Frolik, who's a restricted free agent. Everybody else, I mean, you know, all due respect to Olli Jokinen and Devin Setoguchi, who are unrestricted free agent forwards, and I don't expect, let's talk about that. Do you expect either of those guys to be here after the trade deadline?
Well, I'll start off here. I mean, as far as those two players go, I think we'd agree that they aren't probably integral parts of the future, and you know, again, Olli Jokinen has been better this year, but as far as the money he's going to command, I would believe that there's a chance that he won't be here. Same thing goes for Devin Setoguchi, considering that they had higher hopes for him, to use a Bruce Springsteen song there. But I believe that Devin Setoguchi, he went 18 games without a goal there. For a guy that was expected to come in here, he was given all of the opportunities. He's playing the point on the power play. And, you know, again, he's got the goal the other night, but I think that he's been a bit of a disappointment. So I think there's a chance that neither of those guys do come back. Now, that doesn't mean that they won't come back, but, you know, Richie mentioned the amount of money that's tied up in the D here. And back to what you were saying, Drew, as far as, you know, Chevy's going to have an easier offseason. He doesn't have to re-sign Blake Wheeler, Brian Little, and Zach Bogosian. But I also think he is going to have to improve the bottom two lines. I think we'd all agree that
100%.
With Jim Slater and Matt Halaschuk out, a big fan of Jimmy Slater, big fan of Matt Halaschuk, but those guys have basically been out for over half of the season now. And it's unfortunate. And we've started to see that there isn't enough depth in the AHL for those types of players. Now, Eric Odell has come in and he's got a couple goals, but he's a guy that ideally you'd like to play a scoring role. So we're talking guys like Slater and Halaschuk, gritty guys, guys that can play on the penalty kill. As far as Slater goes, a face-off guy. I do think Chevy does have work to do, and he knows that, but I think that there is, I think, work to do, and not to mention the fact that they do need a left-side defenseman. Grant Klitsam is now out for the season, but really they haven't filled that role, that left side second pairing D role. So that's another area they have to address. But I think Richie's bang on there. I think you really have to start to allocate money in different areas, and you can't have that much money, a third of your team budget, tied up in defensemen, especially when you don't have one of the best D cores in the league. I think the Jets are kind of middle of the pack as far as their decor goes, and I think you have so much promise there with Bogosian and Trouba and Morrissey coming in either next year or the year after. But I do think that there is some work to do here, and I think Byfuglien, whether he plays forward or defenseman, even though we probably agree he should be a forward, I think that's one of the most important decisions they have to make if they don't decide to move him.
You look at the roster, they have Byfuglien a forward, and you look at next year and you say, okay, their top two centers are Little and Shifley, not good enough to compete with the best teams in the league, but certainly Shifley's had really, you know, strong improvement over the last 25 games or so. Little's had a solid year all in all. Kane Ladd, we talked about the last segment. Byfuglien, Wheeler, and you know, if you re-sign for a league, say for $3 million on the right wing, you have basically your money allotted for, you know, Slater to me is a fourth line center. You can have, you know, you could even look to improve on your fourth line, but I'm not as much concerned with the fourth line. What you need to do in free agency is probably sign another netminder instead of Montoya. No disrespect to Montoya. A top four defenseman. It's going to be difficult to find one of those who can play the left side. A third line center who can be better than a third line center ideally. And a third line left winger. And that's four needs, and it depends on what their cap situation. Remus can tweet out the article, but it's going to change, of course, if Byfuglien stays a forward. But that is going to be, it's not an easy offseason. It's actually, I'd say, more difficult than last year.
It's different.
It's more difficult to go out and find something as opposed to re-sign something.
Yeah, as opposed to locking up the core, this is about making your team better in the depth positions. Because we know, guys, with the exception of maybe the second-line right-wing role, which could be Dustin Byfuglien, ideally, this team is going to be very set as far as who is going to play in those top positions. I think it's 11 or 12 players are under contract through not only next year but the year after. So this is a little bit different. You're trying to get a second line right winger, but more so you're trying to fill up the third and fourth lines, and you're trying to improve that second pair there. So different moves need to come. They're different. I don't know if it's more difficult or not, because I think we weren't really sure, you know, how many years would Brian Little get? How many years would Zach Bogosian get? Now it's clear that they were given five plus years. So now it's about, and again, Frolik isn't an easy one either. Mm-hmm. Richie wrote the article for illegalcurve.com, and Frolik's not an easy one either. How much money is he going to want? Is he going to want 2 years? For me, the way he's played, I would like to lock him up for 4 or 5 years. I think he can be a really, really important part of the future. And he's not old by any stretch, 25, 26 years old. So I think that there are some decisions that need to be made. Richie mentioned the goaltending as well. I have no problem with Al Montoya coming back. I think if you look at his numbers, they're very good. Is he good enough to push for the number one spot? That's up in the air. But there are really decisions to be made at every position.
Richie, you had mentioned earlier the possibility, I mean, and it's speculation, but maybe Paul Maurice gets through the Dustin Byfuglien and gets him to harness, you know, his talent that a lot of coaches haven't been able to really get, you know, get through to him so far in his career. If he was to become a solid defenseman and more responsible in his own zone, is he a better defenseman or is he a better forward?
Well, if he can play defense, I mean, defensively, strong defensively as a defenseman, that's where his value is because he can be dominant. We said many times on the show he sees the ice really well. He's got a booming shot, great passer, all that stuff. But he doesn't defend, and it's an effort level thing. So he can be an impact defenseman if he decides to play defense. I'm just not so sure he has or will decide to play defense. Therefore, his abilities that we talked about, the strengths, the offensive strengths, can be utilized while the defensive deficiencies can be, you know, mitigated to an extent.
So put him into, if he refuses to play to his full ability, put him into a situation where you can sort of overlook his defensive shortcomings.
And he can still maximize his potential offensively from the back end on the power play. And, you know, I quickly want to get to Setoguchi. Setoguchi, I mean, I assume he's gone before the trade deadline.
Sure.
I don't think he's a top six guy on a contending team. I think he could fit on a team that has one of those, like, three-line offensive teams like Chicago or San Jose or even St. Louis, guys that have, like, all these lines who can score. You can pitch him in beside a passer and have him be a scorer. But, I mean, you got to deal him. I don't think he's part of the future. Jokinen, I mean, unless you're going to re-sign him, you have to deal him too. And that's the way it works. I realize that they want to have Maurice has relied on him. They want to insulate down the middle, and they don't have a ton of depth. But if it's only going to be 20 games or so after the trade deadline, and you can get something for him as opposed to nothing, you have to do it. I don't care if it's a fourth, third rounder. Better than nothing.
Yeah, back to what we were talking about, though, is a full ability Dustin Byfuglien better as a defenseman or a forward. I agree with Richie. I think it's absolutely a defenseman. It's not like everybody here doesn't want Dustin Byfuglien, the best for Dustin Byfuglien. It's just that it's hard to ignore sometimes his effort level and some of the mistakes he made. So I don't think that everybody is pleased with the fact that he's had these problems. He has these problems. He has these deficiencies in his game. And now the reason why the move was made to forward, not only has he played forward before with Chicago and to a lesser degree Winnipeg, I think that it's that because he has those problems, you're trying to mask them a little bit up at forward because sometimes you just can't rely on him late in the game because his conditioning isn't as good. So, I think ideally you'd like Dustin Byfuglien to look better as a defenseman, but it hasn't happened in the 3 or so years that he's played D.
But on a team level, I mean, it doesn't make sense because then you're trading one of your defensemen. Well, that's one of those guys who can play left side and he can play defense, and probably not. Then if he does play on defense, then you got to trade one of your guys because you're paying too much at the back end at the expense in a salary cap world of something at the front end, and you have three guys who play the same side. So yeah, and then you have a whole bigger hole up front. The roster construction has to play a factor in all of this.
And I don't think we're going to see Paul Maurice come out and say that Dustin Byfuglien is playing forward for the rest of the year and going into next year. But it would almost be nice if he did say that because I think what we're seeing, the first three games, and sure, you know,
He won't give the media anything, which is fine.
Right. And the last two wins have been impressive against not two of the best teams in the Western Conference. When you're talking about Calgary, you're talking about one of the weaker teams this year. But still, he's looked good. He hasn't looked uncomfortable. And he still put up the points. So I think we'd all agree that Byfuglien should probably stay there for at least the short term.
I'm telling you that we have to go to break here, but the Calgary win was a great win. But I'm telling you, that Calgary roster, I don't know if I've seen a worse roster for an NHL game in the past 20 years. I'm not trying to overstate it. I mean, even those expansion teams, that's how bad that team was.
Let's go to break. When we come back, John Forslund, the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, joins us. Talk a little bit more about new Jets coach Paul Maurice. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes on Fox Sports Carolina, John Forslund. John, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
We're doing fine here. Beautiful day, and big weekend of hockey here. Back-to-back games here at home.
Absolutely. John, we brought you on to talk about new Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice. Of course, you've been with the Hurricanes and Whalers organization for, I guess, 23 years, if the team bio is correct so far. So you would know Paul Maurice as well as anybody in the hockey world, I would suggest. You know, looking at Paul Maurice as a person and looking at the city of Winnipeg, which you've obviously visited in your time as a Hurricanes broadcaster, how do you think Paul would fit into a city like Winnipeg?
Well, I think he's an absolute great fit. I mean, he's perfect, really, I think, what they're trying to accomplish there, you know, from the outside. Looking at Paul and looking at how I've dealt with him over the years, first of all, from a media perspective, you're not going to find a better guy in terms of the cooperation you're going to get and all of that and the salient points that he's going to make and just easy to deal with on a day-to-day basis. The biggest attribute I think he has, and he's always had this from when he was a very young coach in the National Hockey League back in 1995, is his intelligence. He's intelligent in the ways that he can incorporate his hockey intelligence into his overall intelligence as a man that kind of helps him get through various situations. And throughout the years with this organization, he was put in various spots, and I've had a chance to see him morph from a young coach who probably thought that, you know, his initial way of approaching things was correct, to a guy that had to adapt and change things. Because don't forget, when he started, many of the players were older than he was, and it was a difficult circumstance, you know, for a guy to come in out of the Ontario Hockey League and start coaching in this at this level with veteran players and so on. But he got used to it, and then he had to get the Carolina thing off the ground here, which wasn't easy in the first 2 years of the transition and dealing with a lot of the negative energy just in terms of how people looked at our organization and how he was trying to get his team to win every night. And under the circumstances of playing outside the market, that was difficult. And then, of course, he had success in 2002. He had tremendous success guiding the Hurricanes, you know, into a fabulous playoff run, which got them to the Stanley Cup Finals. And then after seeing him go to a huge market in Toronto and deal with Canadian media, deal with a high-profile team and kind of handle that for the first time, coming back to the Hurricanes in 2009, he did a remarkable job to turn that team around, lead them to the conference finals and through all of that. Now he's added a little bit of a Russian experience to his resume, so it's a long-winded answer because it's been a long career. But I think, you know, he's going to do a wonderful job there in Winnipeg. I think he's exactly what that team needs. Again, from an outsider's perspective, it just seems like it was stale. You need a guy to come in and kick a few guys and kind of rejuvenate the top end of the lineup, really, the way I look at it. And he's had success just with that aspect alone, and I think that'll help out.
Now, John, how different was Paul? You mentioned coming back to Carolina. How different was he the second time around as compared to the first time around?
Now, he's far different, far different. I think, and he said this, I mean, I think he's looked at himself in different ways and just how he handles people, how he handles situations. We all change over time. You know, we all, you know, in our younger years act a different way. You look back and, you know, if I had to do it all over again, that type of approach, would I do it? It applies to coaching. I think he's certainly in that realm. And I think even when he went to Russia, reading some of the comments that he made about learning about European players, he's had European players. And obviously throughout his early days as a National Hockey League coach and certainly coaching Matt Sundin there with the Maple Leafs and all of that. But by going over to Russia, he got more of an understanding of not only European, but the Russian way of doing things. You know, that's going to help him. But I think he's changed. I think he's changed in a way that, I think his approach is a little more settled. I think he internalized a lot, to be fair, early in his career, kept a lot of things inside. I think it ended up hurting him in the long run because, again, you have to ask questions, you know, what happened in these markets, you know, because Obviously, he's gone through some changes. I think that's probably the situations that have inhibited him from going to the next level as a coach. You know, he's coached over 1,000 games, so he knows how to prepare a team. He knows how to run NHL practices. He obviously knows how to run the bench and get a team to a level, which he's been able to do. But pushing that team to the next level, I think now with all of this experience that he has at his disposal, he'll be able to use it in this environment.
John, going back to Paul Maurice's time in the Continental Hockey League, he coached 1 year with Metallurg Magnitogorsk.
Good work, Ezzy.
Yeah, I was practicing. Yeah, we had Slava Malamud on earlier, so I was practicing my Russian there.
Good.
As far as his year in the KHL goes, were you surprised after he was let go by the Carolina Hurricanes that he decided to go to the KHL? And you touched on it a little bit earlier, but really, how do you think that time in the KHL really improved him as a coach?
I was surprised because I thought that, you know, obviously what he's been able to do in some of his downtime too is broadcast, and he's very good at that. And I figured, you know, here's a way for him, especially if with his link to TSN, he'd be able to, you know, get out front, let hockey people see him on almost a daily basis and just hear, you know, him communicate similar to what John Tortorella has done. Peter Laviolette did that with TSN, you know, all these coaches, McTavish. I mean, it's important for all of them to get out there so people can hear from him. It's not that out of sight, out of mind approach. So I thought he'd do that for a bit and get with his family. He's got a really great young family that have gone through a lot of moves, and I thought there'd be a little bit of a settling down time for that. But so I was surprised that he took the opportunity. But from my understanding of the situation, the offer was so great, and the opportunity to, again, enhance his coaching resume was so great that he had to do it. And, you know, these coaches are coaches through and through. You can't take it out of their blood. And reading some of the things and hearing what he said the first day he took the job in Winnipeg, right, he was not only, you know, obviously excited for the new experience of coaching the team, but just the game day experience. You know, he talked about being behind the bench again during the anthem and what that meant to him. You know, you can't take this out of these guys. You know, all these guys that coach at this level burn to get back, even though it hurts when they leave. And, you know, Claude Noel, same situation. You know, he's a hockey man. I mean, they're gonna be back in some capacity because it's in their blood. Same thing with Paul. So, yeah, I was surprised that he went there. It was an interesting, looking at it from way outside, interesting season in terms of some of the players that he had when Malkin and Gonchar, Nikolai Kuhlman joined that team. You know, he really fortified his roster. They had a heck of a run there when that happened, and then those boys had to come back here and play. I'm not sure what happened down the stretch or through the playoffs, but that can help him. I mean, again, he's got it in his hip pocket. He can use it, you know, whenever he needs it, and that can help any coach.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, John Forslund, talking about new Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice. John, if you had to pinpoint one area in particular, what would you describe as Paul Maurice's biggest coaching strength?
A manager, you know, almost like a business manager. He's very good at that. He's very good at slotting in people where they need to go. He's very good at making sure. I like that he's old school in a way that, you know, young players have to earn their way up through the pecking order and earn their spot. He believes in that. Again, he can fortify the top of the lineup, which is a big trick in the National Hockey League. You know, because of the salary cap and because of the contracts that are given to many of these players, when you're tied into a group of five or six that are your core, when that goes sour or when that's not adjusted properly, they're just not playing well, it affects everybody. So for me, one of the biggest jobs a coach has to do in the National Hockey League is work that and get those guys to believe again and get those guys feeling good about coming to the rink. I think he's going to do that. You know, if he can jumpstart Bufflin and, you know, get him to a point where, you know, he understands what position he's supposed to play and how he's going to play and how consistent he needs to be and where his work ethic needs to be, that'll be good. If Andrew Ladd can just get that weight of the world from, again, an outsider's look, you know, I see all these sound bites and watch it closely, and it just appeared that the weight of the world's coming down on him. And I know the kid. We had him here. I think the world of him, and I think he's a great player to build around for the Winnipeg Jets. But, you know, everybody's human, so he's got to be released relieved a little bit of that. Paul can do that. I mean, Paul is excellent at that. That's a real good strength. Again, he runs his practices well. He's organized. And again, he's leaning on tremendous experiences. You know, he's seen it all. He's gone from, you know, a team that was in the middle of a relocation, which was not an easy predicament to coach under, to a transformation to a virgin market, and how you get a team through that. He did that. He went to the most high profile market in Canada you can be in as a coach. Did that. European coaching experience, and now this. So there is a lot for him to rely upon in terms of experience to get him through.
John, is there one thing that you'd say maybe is his biggest weakness, you know, on the other hand?
I think, again, if he can get through the periods, I've always felt that when the walls are coming down and it's a tough circumstance, he internalizes too much. And, you know, that's when, you know, he'll withdraw a little bit. I think sometimes it has somewhat of an effect on a team. When he's had his best success, you know, and this will be a big key with the Jets, in 02, he had terrific goaltending from Artur Zerbe that helped the Hurricanes, you know, get to the finals against Detroit. In 09, I think Cam Ward played better in 09 than he actually did in 06 when he won the Conn Smythe and carried the Hurricanes, single-handedly, in my opinion, carried the Hurricanes through the playoffs until his back gave out in the conference finals against Pittsburgh. And, you know, that was a situation that helped him as a coach. Pavlik's got to get on board, and Pavlik's got to get to another level, or they might have to find another goaltender there down the road. Mm-hmm. But he's going to have that. In Toronto, I'm not sure he had it. It helps every coach, but, you know, he needs to be able to make sure the team, if the team doesn't have that, he has to make sure that they can compete and win without it. And, you know, in his best days, he's had it. In some of the times where he's been challenged, it hasn't been there. And it's just taking that next step. I think as, with more experience and maturity, I think he can take the next step, you know, to get a team to the level where they need to be a, you know, playoff contender and go deep.
John, you know Paul Maurice very well, and he obviously spent quite a bit of time with TSN doing analysis. Do you believe that time, I guess, on the other side of the microphone, do you think that really does make him better with the media, or what's your opinion on that?
I think so. I hope so. And I even believe, even though this is going to sound, you know, crazy, that it helped a guy like John Tortorella. You know, it doesn't show. You know, it certainly didn't show with the Rangers, but it has to. I mean, when you get in that environment and do what we do and understand where we're coming from, you know, we're people too. And we got jobs to do. And most importantly, I think for everybody in the media, there's a passion about hockey that is the same as a player, same as the coaches, same as the managers, same as the trainers. That's why we're in the game. And sometimes hockey people can look at it like there's another agenda. Maybe there is for some, but I look at it differently. I don't think so. And I think by getting in the media, getting into broadcasting, understanding the work that's involved, you know, you just don't sit down. Some can try it, you know, and get by on your opinion and who you are and all that. It lasts for a little while, but you have to do work and you have to, you know, dive right in. I think he did that. And he's very good at communicating. You see, in those communication skills, you can look at a camera and be succinct and get your point across and connect with an audience. You're going to be able to connect with players, but and then you're going to use everything else that you have to understand who they are and where they're coming from to help you coach. So, yes, I think that will help him, and I thought he did a great job at it too.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by John Forslund. He's the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes. John, you look at this Winnipeg Jets team, and you know we've seen the team for the last, you know, 3 years or whatever, and their defensive woes have been well-documented, very good offensively, you know, towards the top of the league in terms of, you know, goals for, but their goals against has certainly been a problem. Would you describe Paul Maurice more as a defensive coach than an offensive coach?
Yeah, I would think so. And you know, and I think what he had to do is kind of change maybe a little bit of his direction as supposedly the game has changed. You know, we've gone through this now as a league where, you know, he came in the late 90s in the trapping era, in the clutch and grab, you know, and all of that, and he was able to put in a system, coach through that. And then, of course, you know, the lockout came in 05, and we changed the rules, and now all of a sudden, I guess the game was going to open up, and maybe it did for a little bit, and he had to adapt to that. But by and large, hockey's hockey. And what's happened here is hockey has come full circle, in my opinion. They're back to playing a defensive style, most of the teams. You look at the Western Conference. I just did Los Angeles and St. Louis on Thursday night. I mean, it is as defensive and heavy and physical as you want to get when those two teams play. They're systematic. The Western Conference teams all play that way. And for me, that's the trick with the Jets. You know, are the Jets the Winnipeg Jets, or are they still the Atlanta Thrashers? You know, and we saw this group for a long time here in the Southeast Division back in the day, and they always had defensive issues. And that's the biggest leap that they had to make for me as an organization was, you know, looking at that position, getting better players, drafting better players, and they have. You know, Bogosian is a good player, very good all-around defenseman, I think. And Trouba, I think the sky's the limit. So you've got some building blocks there on D. It's now can the coach come in and maybe adjust that and make it better? Claude Noel, I thought he would do it. I mean, I don't know if the systems are going to be different. Maybe the approach just needs to change. And again, it got stale, and maybe that's going to be a difference maker there. But Paul's excellent at that. He's excellent at making sure that's the case, getting teams to believe in that. And, you know, that'll be a big trick for the Winnipeg Jets.
You know, John, it's interesting to me. Correct me if I'm wrong. Obviously, you know the Hurricanes far better than I do. But it seems like the team that Paul's taking over here in Winnipeg has a lot of tools on the defensive end. And really, in Carolina, they've never really had those guys who have the potential to be an absolute knockout number one or even number two at times. Is that Do you think the roster construction is a little bit different for Paul here as opposed to Carolina? And if so, how do you think he deals with that?
Oh, yeah. I think he never really had a group. He had defensemen who, like Glenn Wesley and Sean Hill and guys like that back in 02. Aaron Ward, certainly. You know, he had guys like that who were good, solid National Hockey League guys with experience. Never really had the high-end guy, the guy that you hope someday morphs into a Norris Trophy player or something like that, or at least in consideration. And so when you look at good young defensemen, he was a defenseman too, so I think he has a lot of know-how when it comes to that. He's going to help players like that. But the biggest thing is, you know, we've got a good young player here in Justin Falk that we get to watch game in and game out. He's going to be on the U.S. Olympic team and all of that. The biggest thing in talking with Dave Lewis, who runs the Carolina defense, is, you know, how do you make sure these young players stay confident all the time? It's a tough league, and every game is a mental workout. You know, it's aside from the physical battles they go through, it's a mental workout. You know, how do you keep them at that level? And that's probably a little bit of what's going on with the group, you know, in Winnipeg, including Dustin Byfuglien, who's a dynamic player, but an enigma, because you can't get that pointed, it seems, always in the right direction. But to have a player with that kind of ability, and you look at those three kids I mentioned there, Bogosian, Trouba, and Byfuglien, they're all different, but they all have unlimited potential just in terms of their talent. That'll be one of his biggest tasks there, to make sure that those three guys play to their full potential.
John, some of Paul Maurice's detractors have said that he's only made the playoffs 5 out of the 13 seasons. Do you think that should be disconcerting at all for Jets fans?
I think it's fair. I think it's a real fair look at what it is. I think there's some circumstances, like I've mentioned earlier in the interview, that are a little bit different, that kind of added to that. But again, for Paul, this is a big job. I think he's done everything right, and we've pointed that out. He's been through a lot of different situations, and he's been able to coach. It's getting to the next level, which for me, like I said, I think that's what I was trying to say. That's the big thing that he's going to have to be able to prove, you know, with this group. They're probably going to have to look at some of their personnel and make some adjustments, and I'm sure Kevin will take care of that. But I think that's the one thing, to be fair about it, is you look at that, you take into account some of the situations those teams were in. Maybe that's a pass on some, but he's got to be able to take them from, you know, 500 and getting into the playoffs or slightly better than 500 and going to the next place. That's where the coaches that have that or have teams that can get them there are difference makers.
John Forslund is the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes on Fox Sports Carolina. John, thanks very much for joining us this morning. Great insight into new Jets head coach Paul Maurice.
Thank you, boys. Anytime. Have a great day.
You too, John. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Thank you to John Forslund, the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, for having just joined us to get some insight into new Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice. Terrific interview. In case you missed any of it, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. We're going to open up the phone lines in a couple minutes' time. We want to hear your opinion on Dustin Byfuglien. Do you like him as a forward so far in this three-game experiment? Or would you rather see him back on the Jets' defense? You can give us a call, 204-780-1290. Remus is standing by to take your call. Once again, we want to hear from you on Dustin Byfuglien and his where you want to see him for the Winnipeg Jets as a defenseman or a forward, 204-780-1290. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight, Kelly Taylor is in town. All tickets are sold out. So if you don't have tickets already for tonight, unfortunately, you are out of luck. Next week, Daryl Lennox at Rumors. You don't want to miss out on Daryl, so give them a call or go online and be sure to get tickets to see Daryl Lennox. And of course, if you have not yet got tickets for Charlie Murphy, new shows have just been added, so you can check them out, rumorscomedyclub.com. Charlie Murphy coming in March as well. Gentlemen, Jets and the Oilers, 1 p.m. puck drop here on this station, McPhillips Toyota Game Day on TSN 1290. What's your, you know, your first key to the game? And we'll break down the game, you know, throughout the next 30 minutes or so. What do you see as being a key for the Jets-Oilers game today?
Well, it's interesting because they want to use speed, and that's been the catchphrase since Maurice has come on board just since Sunday. This is a team that can skate with you. So this isn't necessarily a team that they can use speed as an advantage. They can certainly use it, you know, as an advantage, meaning to the, you know, that the other team is going to be a detriment for the other team. I think that the size of the Oilers up front, you should be able to, if so long as your forwards are playing defensively, solid defensively, you should be able to keep this team for the most part to the outside, because you can skate on your back end. You know, all these guys can skate for the most part. Stewart and Party a little bit slower, but overall, you should be okay in that regard. So then when we talk about forwards, we talk about using speed to get in deep. But then when you're in deep, think about the centers on Edmonton, okay? Nugent Hopkins, Boyd Gordon, Sam Gagne. There's no size there. So you should be able to cycle the puck down low and use your speed down low on this team and take advantage of their porous defense and their small centers. And if you can do that, you should be all right today. This is you're playing against Brizgalov. Another thing is just when you're playing against any goalie, it's shoot. But with Brizgalov, just put the puck on net, go to the net, use your size. I mean, Wheeler, Byfuglien, bigger guys than the Oilers have to defend, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jokinen. And they don't get Kane today, but Ladd's not small. Like, go in there, just be physical, and you should be okay. This is a game that they should win. You have to watch the transition. You have to watch turnovers in transition because Edmonton, if you turn the puck over in the neutral zone, Edmonton can go pass goal. So you can't do that, but that leads into speed. Use it on the outside, get the puck in deep, and then worry about controlling the play.
Ezzy, same thing for you?
Yeah, we've...
The exact same thing, Ezzy?
Yeah, we've talked a lot about Dustin Byfuglien. We should mention it's his 500th career NHL game today, so we've been talking about him a lot, so we should probably mention that. But absolutely, the Jets' new mantra is to use their speed more effectively, and that is absolutely the key, and really is the key against any team. But, you know, as far as the Edmonton Oilers go, you don't have Elish Hemsky in the lineup. Nail Yakupov is suffering from a concussion. So I think, you know, the Jets are they're ripe for the picking for the Jets right now, and the Jets are in a groove right now, and they have a perfect opportunity to win three games in a row. They haven't won three games in a row, it feels like, for a long time. So, absolutely. And, you know, Richie mentioned the physicality aspect. This is a team that isn't very big. The defense isn't very mobile. So, the Jets can definitely exploit those areas. But, you know, you have to also consider that Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, Nugent Hopkins, these are elite offensive players. They might be young, and they might be taking a while to develop as a team, the Oilers, that is. But it's still a team that if you play too open or you get out of that structured defensive system that they've played the last couple games and they have at certain points of the season, then they can hurt you. So this isn't by any means going to be a blowout. I know that, you know, it has the ability to be a blowout when you consider that the Oilers have all types of problems and they're missing one of their best players, two of their best players really, in Hemsky and Yakupov. But the Jets on paper should definitely win this one. And, you know, it'd be really nice if they can make it three wins in a row here.
And this depth lines on Edmonton are just as bad as Winnipeg, by the way. So just so you know, like Ryan Smith, Jones, Gatz, like these guys, without Yakupov, as he mentioned, there's not a ton of depth. Hendricks helps that, but I wouldn't be too concerned about getting beat in that regard.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Steve and Jeff, they're first up on the phone lines when we turn it over to you on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We want to hear from you, 204-780-1290. Steve, you're first up after these commercial messages.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The phone lines are now open, and we want to hear from you. What do you think? Should the Winnipeg Jets keep Dustin Byfuglien as a defenseman, or pardon me, as a forward, or should they move him back to defense? We start with Steve. Steve, good morning, and thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
Awesome.
That's good. What do you think? Defense or forward?
Great. I think it's great to have him as forward, like we were talking earlier. I mean, there's only one other player in the league that plays both positions. So, and you were saying it's Burns?
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, they use Burns for defense when they put him up on forward, and there's similarities there, right? You know, Steve, you're looking at a guy, big right-handed shot, can shoot the puck and go to the net, hard to get off, and can play on the back end, on the point, on the power play if you need it.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. I mean, he has that power shot, we all know, and he's one of our only defensemen that actually hits the net very, you know,
that's true also.
High 80s, you know, 80%. But he reminds me of Bertuzzi up front. He's so big and strong, maybe better hands, but I just think it's great what they're doing.
Yeah, you know, I, Steve, I do agree with you. By the way, I should say that I'm wondering if Timmy's playing the shape I'm in as a, you know, is there a metaphor there in terms of Byfuglien and the shape he's in terms of playing or for the band or what? But
I don't know.
I agree with Steve. I think that what he's done is he has, you know, offensively, like Bertuzzi, he goes to the net. And
he's so big, and he finds that open area where other players, you know, they don't really find the open areas, and players stay away from him. He's so big. You know,
and he can still cut around, like, you know, what he does from defense. He comes from defense, he goes on the right wing, and he curls around by the left side. He can still do that when he plays the right wing. Same
sure.
thing. So he can protect the puck and create. And he can come in, as you saw, he can curl in sometimes off his off wing at forward on that pass from Jokinen in last game.
Yeah. Steve, thanks very much for the call.
We need his attitude to be high. That's all we need.
Yeah. Steve, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you, guys.
204-780-1290. Once again, 204-780-1290. Do you think Dustin Byfuglien should be a forward for the Winnipeg Jets, or is the team better off moving him to defense? We go to Jeff. Jeff, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
How's it going, guys? Dustin Byfuglien on forward. I think it's something that is about 2.5 years overdue, in my opinion. I've been saying it since the Jets moved here that he would be better suited with this team as a forward because of the way he plays the game, but also because of the depth that the Jets do have in the system on defense. They can afford to move him up there where they don't have that depth at all on the forward positions.
Yeah, Jeff, I think you make a good point, and you mentioned that you think it's 2.5 years overdue, and everybody remembers how effective he was there on the third line of the Chicago Blackhawks when they won their first of two Stanley Cups. But you make a good point, too. The strength of this team is on defense. You have some youngsters coming in, not only Josh Morrissey, but a guy like Zach Redmond you have to think is going to get some increased playing time, especially without Grant Clitson. So I think it's a really good point that you make. It really is long overdue, and I think that it gives them more depth on the top three forward lines.
Oh, totally. And I think, as I heard you guys talk about earlier on the show, too, whether Bufflin is a trade target or not, and whether moving him up to forward is an improvement or a depreciation of his value. And I think it is a total last chance for Bufflin and Winnipeg in the position of a forward. And it's also a chance to showcase to other teams, especially Stanley Cup contending teams, that he can still play that same role that he did for Chicago when he helped them win the Stanley Cup and was a presence in front of the net, getting those 11 goals in the playoff run.
That's a good point.
Jeff, thanks very much for the call.
No problem, guys. Take care.
204-780-1290. We want to hear from you. Dustin Bufflin, forward or defenseman. We go to Chris in St. James. Chris, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's actually Tone.
it's Tone. Is tone?
Mr. Dial Tone.
Yeah, okay. I think we lost Chris. Is that what happened there? Yeah, looks like we may have lost Chris, so we'll try him again. Chris, if we dropped you, give us a call back, 204-780-1290.
And they can tweet it in as well. I mean,
yeah, you can send us your comments on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. We're not shy. We'll read those on air, too.
When you're talking about, you know, Bufflin, the kind of last chance, as Jeff says, in Winnipeg, I think there's very much, you know, truth to that as well in terms of how the, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, are you going to keep him on defense? Can you afford to pay him? We talked about that earlier in the show. And if not, then is he maybe a bigger asset for you at forward? And that every team has a different situation, is he, right? That's the thing. So every, you know, if there's, he's not going to go to St. Louis to play defense because they have Pietrangelo and Shattenkirk.
Sure.
But he might go, you know, and he's not going to go to Chicago and all that. But there are teams maybe he could fit into those slots. And who would he play with? Boy, I mean, he'd be a lot better defenseman with a guy who can move the puck and still play a sturdy left side. Not that Enstrom doesn't, but I'm talking about a big, tough defenseman.
A prototypical stay-at-home defenseman.
Who can still move the puck to be an asset to him.
Right. Let's go to Matt from Long Island. Is that Long Island, New York, Matt?
Yeah, I'm like 20 minutes east of where the Islanders play. So, well, like, I'm deep bedded in here, man.
Well, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks for listening from New York this morning.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you guys for always putting out such a quality product. I've been following you guys for a couple of years now. It's fantastic.
We very much appreciate
that, Matt.
What do you think about Dustin Bufflin? Forward or defenseman there, Matt?
Well, the answer's pretty obvious if he can improve his defensive play. He has the body and the capabilities to play 25-plus minutes a night. You would want that kind of talent out there if he can be defensively reliable for that amount of time. But if not, then the answer has to be a forward. And that's so unfortunate because it would be an overall diminished value of what he could give you. He's one of the few players in the league who has the skill set and the body to be dynamic. And for whatever reason, it appears that he can't put the whole game together. So I guess it has to be forward until then, right?
Yeah, I mean, Matt, you're out in New York. So, I mean, see, to me, it kind of equates to a similar player like Alexei Kovalev, where you have so much talent and you always wonder, will he become that next, he's already a good player, but will he become that great player? And then there's that fear that you trade the good player who becomes a great player, and then you always regret it.
Oh, fair. And you know what? That's a really interesting example. So I guess then you have to accept him for what he is. He's
right.
Buff is what, 28-9 now?
Yeah.
So he is who he is. And so I guess then he has to be forward, and you'll just be, I guess, a little disappointed. But also, if you readjust your point of view, he has to be able to give you 20 minutes of great power forward action every night, right? Like, there has to be a way to maximize whatever it is he is going to give you and be a dynamic player. So I guess it's forward, right?
Yeah, I think, Matt, you're right. The consensus in this room, at least, is that Bufflin should be a forward going forward, no pun intended. But, you know, really, you nailed it there. It's about making him, because he's such a unique player, it's about maximizing his skill set. And right now, that's playing 16 to 20 minutes as a forward and on the point as a defenseman. So I think it's a really good point.
Matt, thank you very much for the call, and we appreciate the support from Long Island.
Oh, thank you guys for putting out such a great product. So, and thank you for having me on.
Enjoy your rest of your Saturday, Matt. Let's go to Mike. Mike, your point is it shouldn't be up to Dustin Byfuglien. It should be up to the team to decide where they need him the most.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've got 2 points. One, I think that the move to put him to forward might actually benefit the Jets, that everyone saw what he did when he was with the Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you continue to put him on forward, he might do a little bit more, which actually might up his value. So that may, if they do want to make a trade, you know, it's easier to sell him as the four because he's proven himself that, hey, listen, I've done these things in Chicago. I can do it in Winnipeg. And there, that might actually help the team. They do want to get some more pieces for him.
Mm-hmm.
If he's on defense, they're really, you know, everyone talked about it at the U.S. Olympic trials, and
right.
No one really had too much to say about him on defense. So in that sense, it's kind of crippling the Jets. But I'm a professional. I manage a multimillion-dollar company. If this happened in the professional world where someone dictates, you know, where they want to play and they're not getting, you know, not doing their job, it's not going to last long.
Right.
And I find it hard to believe that they could continue as an organization that is out to make money, that's out to, you know, be in the business. They continue to let someone who wants to dictate where he wants to play when it's not doing the team any good.
I agree with that. I totally agree, because you can't have these guys making these decisions. Like, again, you know, if he really wants to play defense and is dominating defensively, then that's great, of course.
Well, but, and at the same time, he's a player. He is not.
That's right.
There's a reason why he's not a general manager. There's a reason why he's not the owner. He is a player. He is. People that run these organizations, they're the ones that make the decisions, and you shouldn't have a player saying, well, I don't want to play for it, I want to play defense. Well, if it's not working, why do you continue to do that?
That's right.
So I find it hard to believe that they would continue to kind of bleed, you know, with him on defense when it's their responsibility to make those decisions, not let someone, you know, dictate what you're going to do.
And, Mike, you mentioned that you're a manager, and I think you make a really good point. I mean, he is a guy that at this point is better suited as a forward. And if you think about it, that versatility isn't something that many players have. If this was another
right.
player, maybe he would have been traded a long time ago
That's
because
right.
they would have said, you know, well, we don't know what to do with him. His defensive deficiencies are just too much, even though he's a very good offensive player. So I think you make a good point. I mean, I said this when Byfuglien moved to forward in the first place. I think he should not consider this a demotion. I think he should take this as an opportunity to get better as a forward.
Well, and these people that are managing, they know what is best for their organization, and they need to say, hey, listen, we know you want to play defense, but that doesn't work for us.
Uh-huh.
That is not what we need. We need what you've done in Chicago. We need you to bring that kind of game, and that's going to help our team, and he needs to understand that. Sometimes you may not like how things are going, but if you're in a team environment like that, you have to, like, suck it up and do what the organization is asking you to do.
Mike, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate your insight today.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Before we go to break, we got one more call we can get in. I think I'm reading this right. Rody, the Dutch Jets fan from the Netherlands. Is that right? Rody, are you there?
Sorry?
Are you there? Can you hear us?
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Hi. Are you calling us from the Netherlands?
Yeah, that's true.
Wow. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, that's a first for us.
Yeah. Thanks for listening all the way. How are things in Europe this morning?
Well, a lot of wind and some rain. The whole winter, we didn't have any snow or ice outdoors.
Rody, what do you think about Dustin Byfuglien as a forward or a defenseman?
I think he should be on the forward line tonight because the Oilers aren't that big and strong. So to beat the Oilers tonight, I think Bufflin's strength is real key tonight.
Well, I agree, Rody, because if you look at this, you know, this back end, you could talk about some speed issues, you could talk about some size issues. You know, guys like Justin Schultz, those guys cannot handle Dustin Byfuglien down low. Like, absolutely not. And even a guy like Ferentz plays big for his size, but it's not a big guy. And Nick Schultz, some mobility issues there. Jeff Petrie is not the most physical guy. So there are options. And this is one of those things where you see a guy like Byfuglien, you go, ooh, you know, you start drooling a bit at the ability for him to dominate a team like that down low.
Yeah, true. I agree with that.
Rody, I have a question for you, though. How are the Netherlands going to do in the upcoming Euro Cup?
Oh.
Well, I don't know what to expect of them, really.
Not a big soccer fan?
Yeah. Sorry, I thought you were talking about soccer.
Oh, no, I am.
About hockey, I meant. Sorry, because we aren't the best in hockey here. Although we had Wies, Winnipeg native. But,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was talking more about soccer because I know the Netherlands are always a top team.
And you want to hear small world here, Rody, before we go to break. Talking about Dale Weiss, that's Timmy used to play puck with him in Winnipeg here. Small world.
Yeah.
From the Netherlands to Winnipeg and everywhere in between. Rody, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Let's go to break. 204-780-1290. We'll take a couple more calls before we wrap it up and turn it over to Hustler and Lawless at the top of the hour. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bruce Springsteen wraps up the show as it usually does here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still a couple minutes if you want to get in and have your opinion heard on if you think Dustin Byfuglien should be a forward or a defenseman for this Winnipeg Jets team. Lots of comments coming in from Twitter as well, at Glenn Saunders 32. Buff is a liability at defense, at least at forward. He can use his abilities and not worry about having to play D2. At the Mask of Zomer, Buff said he likes D better, but it's a team game, and he's okay with forward. He understands he needs to help and is willing. And then at Greg P26, off ice, Buff likes to fly under radar. Keeping him at wing for the Jets lets Buff stay out of the defensive spotlight and reduces stress.
That's a really good point too, because the less pressure you have on when your errors are not as noticeable, then you do get less pressure, less tension, therefore less pressure.
Last couple minutes to get in, 780-1290, 204-780-1290. We go to Greg in St. Vitale. Greg, good morning and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for taking my call, fellas. Listen, let's go back to 2010 when Byfuglien was a superstar in the playoffs, and then Chicago let him go. Chicago had another guy like that this past spring in Bickle.
Yep.
And they kept him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what's the X factor? Why did Chicago, if he's such an asset to the teams that he's playing for, why didn't Chicago do everything in their power to keep him? Because I don't see Bickle as anything better than Dustin Byfuglien. So what's the X factor that they saw and maybe what we don't see as Jets fans? And personally, I do like him as a forward. He's a big body. You can't move him. You know, you can't move the house. So I'll leave it to you guys. You tell me what you think.
Well, Greg, it's a good point. If you remember, in 2010, the Chicago Blackhawks had a lot of salary cap problems. So at the time, they had to make the decision. If you remember, Andrew Ladd was one of those guys that was moved out as well. Dustin Byfuglien, Brent Sopel. I might be missing one or two other guys, but there were at least four or five guys.
Versteeg and a bunch of the
Versteeg was another guy. So, Greg makes a good point as far as, you know, what was different between Bickle and Byfuglien. They're kind of the same type of player. I would argue that Bufflin's a more valuable player, better offensively, and has the ability to play defense. But I think the difference between then, 2010 and the summer of 2013, is the Chicago Blackhawks were up against the salary cap and they had to move some guys out, and they decided that it was going to be Byfuglien, Brent Sopel, Chris Versteeg, Andrew Ladd, those types of players. So I think that was the major difference. I don't think it was because they thought Brian Bickle was necessarily a better player. I think there were just different salary cap implications.
Interesting, though, in the sense that, like, Dave Boland is a guy who, you know, obviously they wanted to keep back then. And this time, later on, they decided he wasn't as valuable, and Bickle, a winger, was. That's because Andrew Shaw and Brandon Saad have become into the picture and the youth. So it is interesting that they did lock up Bickle to that contract, the big body guy, and they chose to spend their money that way as opposed to the years before. Maybe they learned a little bit something about wanting to have a size factor down the stretch. Because remember, both Bickle and Byfuglien were two integral parts of those Stanley Cup teams.
Yep, and they're both guys that were – Bickle, as far as Bickle goes, he was more on the fourth line and then played on the third line with Boland. And as far as Byfuglien goes, he was on the third line. But, yeah, it's a good point that's raised by Greg. What's the difference there? Like, why wouldn't they keep Byfuglien? Byfuglien could still be playing in Chicago. But to me, it was – and I think you guys would agree, back then, they really were up against the salary cap, and they had to make some moves.
I should mention this segment is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants of Manitoba. The CGA Professional Accounting Designations opens doors of unlimited career opportunity and financial reward. For more information, contact the CGA Association at CGA.ca. cga-manitoba.org. Certified general accountants, we see more than numbers. A tweet from at Jordy Ramon. If superstar Jose Bautista, obviously talking baseball, goes from right field to third base without complaints, even though he likes right field better, Buff shouldn't care either. So an interesting point from Jordy Ramon, making an analogy to baseball. One last call, Trevor in Stony Mountain. Trevor, very quickly, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thank you very much. Good morning, boys. Enjoying your show this morning. I believe you guys were talking about UFAs and stuff like that. I also believe Mark Stewart is a UFA come season's end.
That's true.
Yes.
Now, that's a guy that I feel knows his role and is a viable part of the Jets' defense there. Just get your take on it. And if they do decide to move him, what do you think he might be worth? I'll hang up and listen to your replies.
I think that Mark Stewart is your stay-at-home guy. Ideally, they have him on a 5-6 pairing, at maximum. I think that's just a money issue because, I think, Trevor, if he wants to stay here and they're okay with kind of probably meeting a a 3-year, $6 million deal, or he'll go for as much term probably as he can get, I think the Jets would probably consider bringing him back for leadership aspect and block shots and toughness. If they do trade him, I see him probably going for a third. You might be able to get a second from a certain team, but I don't think it gets more than that.
Yeah, I think Mark Stewart has definitely given his all to this team over the last 3 years and dating back to Atlanta, and I think that he's definitely earned another contract from the Jets. Very tough guy, wears an A on his jersey, so I think that it's definitely possible that he is signed before July or around July, and I think he definitely does have some trade value for teams that are looking for a veteran, tough, defensive stay-at-home defenseman.
No time for cheers and jeers today, unfortunately, but that's because we had some great calls and some great tweets.
Yes,
so we thank everybody for participating in the last 30 minutes
for
or so. You did a great job today. Big thank you to today's guests on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Slava Malamud, the foreign correspondent for Sport Express, and John Forslund, the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Also available on tsn1290.ca and on illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, the CGA Association of Manitoba, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and the Linden Market Dental Center. For producer Michael Remus and producer Tim, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We remind you that if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Hustler and Lawless.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.